Maps. The people of the valley drew maps, mostly of the valley. They evidently enjoyed laying out and looking at the spatial relationships of places and objects they knew well. The better they knew them, the better they liked to draw and map them. Children often drew maps of the fields and hills about their hometown, often in incredible detail, a dot for every rock, a mark for every tree. Small, schematicized, symbolic maps of the valley, or a part of it, were often carried by people going on a downriver journey to the ocean or upriver to Wakwaha. As most people knew every feature of the landscape, from mountains to molehills, within 4 or 5 miles of their home, and the entire length of the valley was less than 30 miles, these maps were less guides than talismans. The larger maps were remarkably accurate, considering that their function was mostly aesthetic or poetic. But then, accuracy was considered a fundamental element or quality of poetry. Maps of the valley were always drawn as charts of the Na and its confluence, and maps of areas within the valley took the principal creek or creek system as their axis. The source of the stream is at the top of the map. Compass directions may be noted, but the map is oriented to the flow of water, and down is the bottom of the page. There is often an element of perspective in the drawing of hills and mountains, but no foreshortening. Towns and other man-made features are usually marked with a symbol, the heiaif for towns, and the mapmakers did not like to write on their maps, it seems, for some have no lettering at all, and many have only an initial, or the most cryptic, crabbed indications for the names of the towns, creeks, mountains, and so on. Since practically every feature of any interest or permanence had a name, the mapmaker may have followed a practical course in refusing to try to crowd them all onto the map. The Finder's Lodge made and used maps of regions adjacent to the ranges of the valley and of the area for some hundreds of miles around. These were kept up to date both by the exploring parties sent out by the finders and by reference to the constantly updated aerial maps in the exchange computers. Maps of the whole continent, and of the seas and other continents and globes of the world, were used as teaching aids by the Madrone Lodge. Every town had at least a few of these world maps. They certainly came from the exchange to start with, and they could have been updated at request, but the request was seldom made, to judge by the venerable fragility of most of the beautifully drawn and imaginatively decorated world maps displayed and shelved in the Madrone Lodges. The rest of the world was not a matter of very urgent concern to most people of the valley. They were content to know that it was there. Most of them had a vague idea of global geography. Their notions of global and continental distances were both inadequate and exaggerated. For most, not all, real geography included the volcano country in the north and the desert mountains in the south. The Pacific Ocean was the west. To the east was the inland sea and its shores, the range of light, the Omorn Sea, and the remote range of heaven, or range of the rocks. Beyond these, the lands go on and on to the sea again, you know, and so on round till you come back to the valley. Illustration captions. Some of the paths around Tsinshan Creek. A Kesh map of the watershed of Tsinshan Creek, given to the editor by Little Bear Woman of Tsinshan. Only Tsinshan Mountain, Blue Rock, the spring of Tsinshan Creek, and a few other springs and hills are named on the map. The note written on the lower right part of the map reads, Northwestwards 15 under Toyon Boulder, before the grass. Little Bear Woman had no idea what it referred to. She said the map had been around the house for a long time. The watershed of Tsinshan Creek. This map is based upon and elaborates Little Bear Woman's map of the Tsinshan and Madidino region, including fewer paths and more place names. End of illustration captions.